Remember, brain is not mind. Matter cannot be sick, and mind is immortal. The mortal body is only an erroneous mortal belief of mind in matter. What you call matter was originally error in solution, elementary mortal mind, likened by Milton to chaos and old night. One theory about this mortal mind is that its sensations can reproduce man, can form blood, flesh, and bones. The science of being, in which all is divine mind, or God and his idea, would be clearer in this age, but for the belief that matter is the median of man, or that man can enter his own embodied thought, bind himself with his own beliefs, and then call his bonds material and name them divine law. When man demonstrates Christian Science absolutely, he will be perfect. He can neither sin, suffer, be subject to matter, nor disobey the law of God. Therefore, he will be as the angels in heaven. Christian Science and Christianity are one. How, then, in Christianity, any more than in Christian Science, can we believe in the reality and power of both truth and error, spirit and matter, and hope to succeed with contraries? Matter is not self-sustaining. Its false supports fail one after another. Matter succeeds for a period only by falsely parading in the vestments of law. Whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. In Christian Science, a denial of truth is fatal, while a just acknowledgement of truth and of what it has done for us is an effectual help. If pride, superstition, or any error prevents the honest recognition of benefits received, this will be a hindrance to the recovery of the sick and the success of the student. If we are Christians on all moral questions, but are in darkness as to the physical exemption which Christianity includes, then we must have more faith in God on this subject and be more alive to his promises. It is easier to cure the most malignant disease than it is to cure sin. The author has raised up the dying partly because they were willing to be restored, while she has struggled long and perhaps in vain to lift a student out of a chronic sin. Under all modes of pathological treatment, the sick recover more rapidly from disease than does the sinner from his sin. Healing is easier than teaching, if the teaching is faithfully done. The fear of disease and the love of sin are the sources of man's enslavement. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but the Scriptures also declare, through the exalted thought of John, that perfect love casteth out fear. The fear occasioned by ignorance can be cured. But to remove the effects of fear produced by sin, you must rise above both fear and sin. Disease is expressed not so much by the lips as in the functions of the body. Establish the scientific sense of health, and you relieve the oppressed organ. The inflammation, decomposition, or deposit will abate, and the disabled organ will resume its healthy functions. When the blood rushes madly through the veins or languidly creeps along its frozen channels, we call these conditions disease. This is a misconception. Mortal mind is producing the propulsion or the languor. And we prove this to be so when, by mental means, the circulation is changed and returns to that standard which mortal mind has decided upon as essential for health. Anodynes, counter-irritants, and depletion never reduce inflammation scientifically, but the truth of being whispered into the ear of mortal mind will bring relief. Hatred and its effects on the body are removed by love. Because mortal mind seems to be conscious, the sick say, "How can my mind cause a disease I never thought of and knew nothing about until it appeared on my body?" The author has answered this question in her explanation of disease as originating in human belief before it is consciously apparent on the body, which is in fact the objective state of mortal mind, though it is called matter. This mortal blindness and its sharp consequences show our need of divine metaphysics. Through immortal mind or truth, we can destroy all ills which proceed from mortal mind. Ignorance of the cause or approach of disease is no argument against the mental origin of disease. You confess to ignorance of the future and incapacity to preserve your own existence, and this belief helps rather than hinders disease. Such a state of mind induces sickness. It is like walking in darkness on the edge of a precipice. You cannot forget the belief of danger, and your steps are less firm because of your fear and ignorance of mental cause and effect. Heat and cold are products of mortal mind. The body, when bereft of mortal mind, at first cools, and afterwards it is resolved into its primitive mortal elements. Nothing that lives ever dies, and vice versa. Mortal mind produces animal heat and then expels it through the abandonment of a belief, or increases it to the point of self-destruction. Hence it is mortal mind, not matter, which says, "I die." Heat would pass from the body as painlessly as gas dissipates into the air when it evaporates, but for the belief that inflammation and pain must accompany the separation of heat from the body. Chills and heat are often the form in which fever manifests itself. Change the mental state, and the chills and fever disappear. The old school physician proves this when his patient says, "I am better," but the patient believes that matter, not mind, has helped him. The Christian Scientist demonstrates that divine mind heals, while the hypnotist dispossesses the patient of his individuality in order to control him. No person is benefited by yielding his mentality to any mental despotism or malpractice. All unscientific mental practice is erroneous and powerless, and should be understood and so rendered fruitless. The genuine Christian Scientist is adding to his patient's mental and moral power, and is increasing his patient's spirituality while restoring him physically through divine love. Palsy is a belief that matter governs mortals and can paralyze the body, making certain portions of it motionless. Destroy the belief, show mortal mind that muscles have no power to be lost, for mind is supreme, and you cure the palsy. Consumptive patients always show great hopefulness and courage, even when they are supposed to be in hopeless danger. This state of mind seems anomalous except to the expert in Christian Science. This mental state is not understood simply because it is a stage of fear so excessive that it amounts to fortitude. The belief in consumption presents to mortal thought a hopeless state, an image more terrifying than that of most other diseases. The patient turns involuntarily from the contemplation of it, but though unacknowledged, the latent fear and the despair of recovery remain in thought. Just so it is with the greatest sin. It is the most subtle and does its work almost self-deceived. The diseases deemed dangerous sometimes come from the most hidden, undefined, and insidious beliefs. The pallid invalid, whom you declare to be wasting away with the consumption of the blood, should be told that blood never gave life and can never take it away, that life is spirit, and that there is more life and immortality in one good motive and act than in all the blood which ever flowed through mortal veins and simulated a corporeal sense of life. If the body is material, it cannot, for that very reason, suffer with a fever. Because the so-called material body is a mental concept and governed by mortal mind, it manifests only what that so-called mind expresses. Therefore, the efficient remedy is to destroy the patient's false belief by both silently and audibly arguing the true facts in regard to harmonious being, representing man as healthy instead of diseased, and showing that it is impossible for matter to suffer, to feel pain or heat, to be thirsty or sick. Destroy fear and you end fever. Some people, mistaught as to mind science, inquire when it will be safe to check a fever. Know that in science you cannot check a fever after admitting that it must have its course. To fear and admit the power of disease is to paralyze mental and scientific demonstration. If your patient believes in taking cold, mentally convince him that matter cannot take cold and that thought governs this liability. If grief causes suffering, convince the sufferer that affliction is often the source of joy, and that he should rejoice always in ever-present love. Invalids flee to tropical climates in order to save their lives, but they come back no better than when they went away. Then is the time to cure them through Christian Science and prove that they can be healthy in all climates, when their fear of climate is exterminated. Through different states of mind, the body becomes suddenly weak or abnormally strong, showing mortal mind to be the producer of strength or weakness. A sudden joy or grief has caused what is termed instantaneous death. Because a belief originates unseen, the mental state should be continually watched, that it may not produce blindly its bad effects. The author never knew a patient who did not recover when the belief of the disease had gone. Remove the leading error or governing fear of this lower so-called mind, and you remove the cause of all disease as well as the morbid or excited action of any organ. You also remove in this way what are termed organic diseases as readily as functional difficulties. The cause of all so-called disease is mental, a mortal fear, a mistaken belief or conviction of the necessity and power of ill health. Also, a fear that mind is helpless to defend the life of man and incompetent to control it. Without this ignorant human belief, any circumstance is of itself powerless to produce suffering. It is latent belief in disease, as well as the fear of disease, which associates sickness with certain circumstances and causes the two to appear conjoined, even as poetry and music are reproduced in union by human memory. Disease has no intelligence. Unwittingly, you sentence yourself to suffer. The understanding of this will enable you to commute this self-sentence and meet every circumstance with truth. Disease is less than mind, and mind can control it. Without the so-called human mind, there can be no inflammatory nor torpid action of the system. Remove the error, and you destroy its effects. By looking a tiger fearlessly in the eye, Sir Charles Napier sent it cowering back into the jungle. An animal may infuriate another by looking it in the eye, and both will fight for nothing. A man's gaze, fastened fearlessly on a ferocious beast, often causes the beast to retreat in terror. This latter occurrence represents the power of truth over error, the might of intelligence exercised over mortal beliefs to destroy them. Whereas hypnotism and hygienic drilling and drugging, adopted to cure matter, is represented by two material erroneous bases. Disease is not an intelligence to dispute the empire of mind or to dethrone mind and take the government into its own hands. Sickness is not a God-given nor a self-constituted material power which copes astutely with mind and finally conquers it. God never endowed matter with power to disable life or to chill harmony with a long and cold night of discord. Such a power, without the divine permission, is inconceivable. And if such a power could be divinely directed, it would manifest less wisdom than we usually find displayed in human governments. If disease can attack and control the body without the consent of mortals, sin can do the same, for both are errors announced as partners in the beginning. The Christian Scientist finds only effects where the ordinary physician looks for causes. The real jurisdiction of the world is in mind, controlling every effect and recognizing all causation as vested in divine mind. A felon on whom certain English students experimented fancied himself bleeding to death and died because of that belief when only a stream of warm water was trickling over his arm. Had he known his sense of bleeding was an illusion, he would have risen above the false belief. Let the despairing invalid, inspecting the hue of her blood on a cambric handkerchief, think of the experiment of those Oxford boys who caused the death of a man when not a drop of his blood was shed. Then let her learn the opposite statement of life as taught in Christian Science, and she will understand that she is not dying on account of the state of her blood, but is suffering from her belief that blood is destroying her life. the so-called vital current, does not affect the invalid's health. But her belief produces the very results she dreads. Fevers are errors of various types. The quickened pulse, coated tongue, febrile heat, dry skin, pain in the head and limbs are pictures drawn on the body by a mortal mind. The images held in this disturbed mind frighten conscious thought. Unless the fever picture drawn by millions of mortals and imaged on the body through the belief that mind is in matter and discord is as real as harmony is destroyed through science, it may rest at length on some receptive thought and become a fever case, which ends in a belief called death, which belief must be finally conquered by eternal life. Truth is always the victor. Sickness and sin fall by their own weight. Truth is the rock of ages, the headstone of the corner. But on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. Contending for the evidence or indulging the demands of sin, disease, or death, we virtually contend against the control of mind over body and deny the power of mind to heal. This false method is as though the defendant should argue for the plaintiff in favor of a decision which the defendant knows will be turned against himself. The physical effects of fear illustrate its illusion. Gazing at a chained lion, crouched for a spring, should not terrify a man. The body is affected only with the belief of disease produced by a so-called mind ignorant of the truth which chains disease. Nothing but the power of truth can prevent the fear of error and prove man's dominion over error. Many years ago, the author made a spiritual discovery, the scientific evidence of which has accumulated to prove that the divine mind produces in man health, harmony, and immortality. Gradually, this evidence will gather momentum and clearness until it reaches its culmination of scientific statement and proof. Nothing is more disheartening than to believe that there is a power opposite to God or good, and that God endows this opposing power with strength to be used against himself, against life, health, harmony. Every law of matter or the body supposed to govern man is rendered null and void by the law of life, God. Ignorant of our God-given rights, we submit to unjust decrees, and the bias of education enforces this slavery. Be no more willing to suffer the illusion that you are sick or that some disease is developing in the system than you are to yield to a sinful temptation on the ground that sin has its necessities. When infringing some supposed law, you say that there is danger. This fear is the danger and induces the physical effects. We cannot in reality suffer from breaking anything except a moral or spiritual law. The so-called laws of mortal belief are destroyed by the understanding that soul is immortal, and that mortal mind cannot legislate the times, periods, and types of disease with which mortals die. God is the lawmaker, but he is not the author of barbarous codes. In infinite life and love, there is no sickness, sin, nor death. And the Scriptures declare that we live, move, and have our being in the infinite God. Think less of the enactments of mortal mind, and you will sooner grasp man's God-given dominion. You must understand your way out of human theories relating to health, or you will never believe that you are quite free from some ailment. The harmony and immortality of man will never be reached without the understanding that mind is not in matter. Let us banish sickness as an outlaw and abide by the rule of perpetual harmony, God's law. It is man's moral right to annul an unjust sentence, a sentence never inflicted by divine authority. Christ Jesus overruled the error which would impose penalties for transgressions of the physical laws of health. He annulled supposed laws of matter, opposed to the harmonies of spirit, lacking divine authority and having only human approval for their sanction. If half the attention given to hygiene were given to the study of Christian Science and to the spiritualization of thought, this alone would usher in the millennium. Constant bathing and rubbing to alter the secretions or to remove unhealthy exhalations from the cuticle receive a useful rebuke from Jesus' precept: take no thought for the body. We must beware of making clean merely the outside of the platter. He who is ignorant of what is termed hygienic law is more receptive of spiritual power and of faith in one God than is the devotee of supposed hygienic law who comes to teach the so-called ignorant one. Must we not then consider the so-called law of matter a canon more honored in the breach than the observance? A patient thoroughly booked in medical theories is more difficult to heal through mind than one who is not. This verifies the saying of our Master: whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child shall in no wise enter therein. One whom I rescued from seeming spiritual oblivion, in which the senses had engulfed him, wrote to me, "I should have died but for the glorious principle you teach, supporting the power of mind over the body and showing me the nothingness of the so-called pleasures and pains of sense." The treatises I had read and the medicines I had taken only abandoned me to more hopeless suffering and despair. Adherence to hygiene was useless. Mortal mind needed to be set right. The ailment was not bodily, but mental. And I was cured when I learned my way in Christian Science.